Good afternoon. This is November 12, 2019, collective bargaining between the Board of Trustees at the University of Central Florida and the United Faculty of Florida chapter at the University of Central Florida. We have a copy of the collective bargaining minutes from October 29th. 2019. For everyone's review. Looks good to me.
Yep.
All right, I think we're all in agreement that the minutes from October 29th, 2019 are correct and in order. And I thank everyone for that.
So I think Article 18 is on the agenda for today.
Correct.
And we have two people here with us, Svetlana Strom, who is Director of the Office of Technology Transfer, and Sandra Savinsky, who is an attorney from the General Counsel's Office who heads up the group of research attorneys for the university. So, and you sent us your most recent proposal, so why don't you walk us through that? I have to be honest, I had a little bit of a hard time figuring out what it came from. Because it was like, okay, this is part.
Well, then also, you sent us your proposal in advance as well. Mm-hmm. So I think here's, oh, I'm sorry. I think everybody got her side. So yeah. I think we need a, I think, did you send it after the 29th or did
no.
you send it?
They sent theirs first.
They sent theirs first.
Yeah, because it was,
okay,
it was at
right.
the end of the session, the 29th. And then we sent ours Thursday.
Yeah.
Okay. I apologize if it was a little difficult to.
I just wasn't clear.
I'm happy to answer any questions.
So were you working off of
okay.
the.
Okay, you take a copy.
Yeah,
we'll
share
it.
Yes, the status quo language.
The status quo language, because I was looking at it, I was like, okay, are they working on status quo? Are they working on their first proposal? What are they working
no, no,
on?
Our. Typically, our. Our proposals go off of status quo language for the first proposal.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, yes, this
well,
is
we
from...
Well, we've had several proposals from you for the last cycle.
Correct.
Okay.
But, no, we have... This one went
this
all the way...
Fresh.
From,
okay.
Fresh from status quo, yes.
Okay. So, why don't you walk us through a little bit then?
Well, 18.1, there's no,
yeah,
change.
That's
no
okay.
changes. That's fine.
No.
Just had some minor changes in... 18.2, just clearing up kind of on line 11. I think just making it much more clear because it may not be, make it just is subject to copyright. So line 16, kind of striking that language because going down to line 34 to line 40, proposing to strike that language because the goal, I think, the goal in our proposal here is to just make everything a work. So just going back to one term because we've gone, I think, a little bit too far in the rabbit hole of trying to parse out between, okay, we've got instructional materials, we've got distance learning materials, we've got so many other different little pockets where kind of going back to, you know, what we've agreed or proposed to agree upon is the work.
Okay.
Language. So I think that's if you're may have been alarmed by a lot of the majority of the strikeout, that's the rationale behind
okay.
Behind that. So with the invention as well, just kind of model or kind of updating that definition. Like I said before, removing the instructional technology material definition, and then kind of reworking our university support definition, I think it says pretty much what the status quo language is, but I think it clarifies some distinctions in the language. Any questions on 18.2?
No, I will at some point, yeah.
Okay. Sorry, I just wanted... Yes, Chuck?
Now, line 29.
Yes.
I would suggest that you strike the word invention, because it's a circular definition.
Mm-hmm. Yes, an invention is
okay.
An invention.
Okay, I can agree to that.
Mm-hmm. Sherry, I have a question, yeah. Kind of procedurally. I mean, so are we going to discuss after, or how do you want to...
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm going to let him walk through it all, and then I've got some questions to ask,
sure,
about various,
okay,
pieces of it, but I'm going to go back.
Okay.
And,
sure.
Okay.
Go ahead, John.
So kind of going into 18.3, just making some minor changes there with 59 to 60, kind of going back to the previous train of thought with 67 through 70, kind of going back to that initial definition of works instead of, okay, we've got another definition of a different... that has been kind of, I don't want to say invented, but kind of used for this agreement. So kind of going back to going down to line 79, same thought process. Okay, let's just go back to works. And then... disclosure review. So, I think, you know, line 84 to 87, we're talking about the disclosure. Okay. That's all right. Going down to line 93, 94, the strikeout there, we, proceeds and royalties in our proposal are addressed at the end. So just striking out the university policy and bringing language into the contract. With going down the line 108, outside activity. So our position is outside activity doesn't belong in this section. Outside activity is clearly defined in Article 19. So both for the inventions and the works section, we're proposing to strike out that language. So that's going down to line 143 down to 179. So for instance, on line 159, undisclosed outside activity is considered unauthorized. Well, not if, yeah, but that's handled in Article 19. So I think there's a lot of duplication of efforts here. And then kind of going down to line 205, once again, kind of talking about licensing. That's the proposed language on line 235. I know I asked in one of our bargaining sessions about the university policy addressing the division of proceeds. I still haven't been able to find it. I checked the Office of Research and Commercialization. So instead of just having some external policy, I think we should come to an agreement in the contract on the division of proceeds. And then pretty much I moved that transfer of copyright to the employee language all the way down to the end. So it's the same language. The highlighted word, mm-hmm, is shall instead of may. And that's the only change in that section of language.
Okay. So before I, before we even start to talk about this.
Yes.
I'm going to go get a bunch of CBAs for our side of the table because, I mean, there's certain things that I'm not sure that
I'll go grab them. What do you want?
Just CBAs.
How many? Like enough for everyone?
Well, enough for on our side of the table. I'm presuming they know what they're operating off of.
Yes.
Okay, so I'm going to ask a couple of questions and then I'll turn it over to my team, Ken.
Sure.
So I understand why you struck instructional technology material because we don't, that's always been problematic.
Correct.
But it strikes me, in our proposal, we had created a category, we call it instructional materials.
Yes.
Because there's a lot in here. When you look at what you're including in works.
Yes.
There are a lot of things that are not included in works that were in our materials. So, because this, I mean, if you notice, there's very little in here. That deals with digital, online courses, anything having to do with that. And I think that, since that's about a, what, a third to a half of our, moving up to a half of our...
Yes, of our credit hours.
Of our credit, I think that at some point we're going to have to address, we have to address that in the contract and how I don't see that, I don't see it, it is, but tell me if I'm wrong.
Well, I would say go back to line 11. It says works includes but are not limited to. So, for instance, that's, you know, this isn't an exhaustive list, but...
Yeah, but you wouldn't let us get away with language that was that vague, especially when it involved something that is such a big part of our...
Right.
Well,
I will make the argument, too, that our works and everything in Article 18 that you propose in terms of that has to be subject to copyright. So it has to be original. It has all the different provisions of copyright. So I'm going to make the argument that not everything that faculty members do is subject to copyright. But then, therefore, the language in the contract is trying to expand beyond copyright. So I think that's what some of the concerns, like, for instance, a PowerPoint, okay, well, that, you know, I could be using Creative Commons materials, I could be creating, I could be using other materials, I may be using facts that are not copied, not being able to copyright. So I think that's the concern on our side with that type of language. So I know in this area, sometimes ambiguity is better.
Interesting. Okay. Svetlana or... you want to add anything to that?
I kind of got lost, to be honest, in the exchange. So we're talking about the definition of work, just...
Well, the
work is just the Title 17, basically. It's called the definition of copyright.
Right. But you were talking about instructional material. So when we talk about work and the variety of rights... If we want to have exceptions where, for example, scholarly works.
Correct.
Right. So if we wanted to be clear to say in a category that we want to be sure that those rights are owned by the faculty member, then having a term to refer to those items as a collective is helpful. So every time we want to talk about that collection, not intending to be limiting it, but just in a way to refer to it that can have some bounds around it that everybody can know and agree with. So if we were, there's gray area. There can be gray area.
There's gray area all over this.
That's right. So, so that's where if we have that term and we want to kind of be sure that we're saying if something fits in this category, then these rights can go, you know, this way, that way, whatever it's determined to be, as opposed to all the works, like a subset. I agree with you. There were too many things.
Well, there's still, I mean, if you look at the amount of stuff that's even in this, that, you know, I'm not sure how many architectural drawings we actually do at the university, the faculty actually do at the university, or...
I think that definition is essentially is drawn from the copyright.
It is.
Yeah,
that's
it
exactly
is.
Where it comes from. So, yes. I'm not sure that that captures what we, I mean, and maybe that's a question that we need to have a discussion about. Is that what we intend to capture and only what we intend to capture under an article about inventions and works?
I think that's...
It's not really a handout, it's like a resource, right?
Okay.
That's just a copy of our PAR.
And I guess what you're saying is no, you want to cover only those things that are contained within Title 17 of the U.S. Code.
Well, that's our first proposal.
That's our first proposal. Okay.
Or let me just say that's our current proposal.
Okay. Okay, so University 16.
So I know previously I talked about, I think our proposal was just a one page, but... Right now, we're trying to work within
sure.
the structure of Article 18. And the, some of the other language here in blue should look familiar as we like to look at what some of our other peer institutions are doing in the state. And that language is adopted from FSU, and they're recently... ratified collective bargaining agreement.
Which part? You mean the convention?
Yes, so 29 through 32 and then 46 through 53.
Okay, so...
I have a comment or
yeah,
so.
Go ahead.
Is that, okay, so in the definition for invention...
Yes.
So what's been part of what's removed in the edit is
mm-hmm.
computer software and databases, and I understand how they previously are kind of in both sections.
Mm-hmm.
So in order to kind of clarify that, because when something is, for example, a piece of computer software or database, let's use both of those as an example,
mm-hmm.
They will potentially have both a copyrightable aspect
mm-hmm.
and also an invention.
Yeah, it can fit in both categories.
So we effectively, operationally, they can't be separated and sent down different paths of rights
mm-hmm.
and how they're handled, because it won't really work as far as maybe licensing or however anybody wants to use it. So the bundle can stay together as to... For example, a piece of software code and a patent that's related to that software code, so you need both together. So in the definition of invention,
mm-hmm.
If we add back in software and databases,
mm-hmm.
if they include an element of what's in the definition of invention here.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So that way, they're technically, they're still a work, but then they can fall under the invention definition for the purposes of when they have both.
Okay. We'll consider that.
Mm-hmm.
And then, in addition to process, business method also,
mm-hmm.
even though it's very similar, but not necessarily the same thing.
Okay.
People get patents on business methods now?
Kind of coming around in a little, some respects.
Okay. Svetlana, do you have any comments on anything so far?
Just are we just works and inventions? Is that where we're talking
about? Yeah, we're still there.
Okay, just checking. I agree with Sandra's comments.
Okay. University support. Uh, I seem to recall in the dim recesses of my brain that you explained to us at one time why you have specified that the use of only non-unit personnel, but why are you excluding unit personnel? Tell me again,
so
please.
So for instance, since our bargaining unit has various positions and titles, for example, mm-hmm. myself, which are, so basically it's kind of the in-unit person. I think it would be to, because under our definition, I'm a resource, but I'm also in the unit covered under the contract. Mm-hmm. So I think we're trying to separate in-unit versus out-of-unit personnel. For instance, like an A&P, USPS type person versus like myself and librarians. For
you don't consider yourself a resource?
I do, however, myself, I'm not paid by university funds. I'm paid by student fees myself. But I think that's to make, I think it's to make the argument that I don't think it, the nature of our relationship is collaborative, just as if Maria is working with Giovanna, interdisciplinary. Mm-hmm. So I don't think, you know, it's like I'm not a piece of equipment.
Well, neither are non-unit personnel.
No, I agree, but for the definitions, we're open to suggestions for language there. So I think making that distinction between in-unit and non and out-of-unit personnel, I think is a good distinction to have in the contract. Like, if Giovanna wanted to work with me, okay, university resource, it's, you know, okay, then the university owns it. So I think it's, or at least that was the interpretation that we had in previous conversations. So I think we're just trying to make the differentiation to make it a much more collaborative for in-unit personnel versus personnel.
So in-unit personnel only collaborate with other in-unit personnel.
But the nature of the relationship is different.
Okay.
But if we're putting in non-unit, then that's limiting. That's excluding all in-unit, but all the interdisciplinary activities that we have so many co-inventors that are a variety of people who are in-unit, who are supported by university resources. Mm-hmm. So if we just use the non-unit adjective here, mm-hmm. then we're leaving out all of the university-supported in-unit collaborators.
So, for example, for the in-unit person, for instance, with a creative effort or scholarship, that's clearly defined in here that the in-unit person would have, that the university, that's under the exception list, but for instance, for the out-of-unit person, the university can claim ownership of their work. I think that's the difference.
But university
support. We're not even
support,
talking about ownership
yeah.
here, though.
Mm-hmm.
We're just defining.
It's a definition that's used throughout, and it's used for works and inventions.
Right.
So from the perspective of a particular individual with a variety of collaborators,
correct.
Why would we want to exclude in-unit collaborators who are supported by university, who would constitute university support in the invention or whatever product that they're generating?
Well, because the like you said, the university supported effort, the current, going back to the definition, is that if it's university supported, the university owns it. Unless it falls into these specific exemptions.
Well,
so for example,
no, it has to be more than non-incidental use of university support.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a vague term.
Yeah.
It is.
Much like work.
Yes. Yeah, so all this is very individualized. But
so if an in-unit So this is what we're, I guess the position you're coming from is you're, somebody's in unit.
Mm-hmm.
They're working on something, and part of determining their rights, according to this article, would be assessing whether or not university support was involved.
Well, and then also if they're covered under the contract or not.
Well, we're talking about an in-unit.
Right.
An in-unit PI. Let's say.
Correct.
In-unit,
yes.
PI. We want to determine the rights to, mm-hmm, this invention or work.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to be able to define whether university support,
correct,
was involved in that project.
Correct.
So in order to do that, if they are engaged with another in-unit individual performing efforts,
mm-hmm,
also maybe Kalmbenner, or out of unit,
mm-hmm,
those activities would be relevant to whether the initial PI was receiving university support.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't see how you can go back to the article that you're trying to use as your definition. It's circular if you take both people out.
Okay.
All right. We'll move on.
Yeah. Oh, well. No. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you for. Well, we'll consider.
And students as well.
Yeah, I think students are still in here. Mm-hmm. Or no, they're not. They
didn't see them there.
Yeah, I didn't
no.
see them either.
Oh. Nope. So, students, why are students not in here?
Or as a resource, you mean?
Mm-hmm. As a resource?
Mm-hmm. They were deleted.
Students back at university school.
They always have been. I'm just wondering why all of a sudden they are no longer. Maybe that's just an oversight.
Maybe.
Okay. I mean, this language comes directly from FST.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So we're okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. 18.3.
So we'll also add the use of resources in the last sentence.
Yes.
With respect to the university computer facilities.
Mm-hmm. Which lines are you on?
Oh, sorry.
Oh, the 52.
52? Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. So, university computer facilities can be a pretty broad collection of,
mm-hmm,
computer facilities, some that are extremely complex,
mm-hmm,
and resources, and some that are maybe more simple.
Mm-hmm.
So is your intention that any computer facility, high data, high throughput?
So I think, well, also going back to the definition is, okay, does everybody, if everybody has access to it, for example.
949.
So kind of going back to, it must go beyond the resources commonly or routinely provided or made available to similarly situated employees for the performance of their assignment. So, for instance, in your example, I'm an instructional designer. I have access to certain computer resources. My colleagues do as well. I'm not expecting, yes, a university resources. I was made available to a quantum computer, for example. Yes, that wouldn't fit the definition because it's not made available to people, okay, in my assignment.
So, just to be sure that I understand, so if we take kind of it from the other side, and I'm somebody who regularly uses a sophisticated quantum computer in my UCF work,
mm-hmm,
that by what your intention here is, then I can also make use of that university quantum computer for my own purposes, and that won't be university support because I can use that in my regular day-to-day?
Well, if you're using it in your regular day-to-day, if your assignment is to use the piece of technology,
mm-hmm,
then it's routine. It's not going above and beyond. Now, if they made an ultra super modern quantum computer, for example, then of course that it's just the purpose of the language is to go beyond what would normally be in your assignment. So it's not to.
So since university support is a one of the evaluating factors as to who owns, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm a regular user of the quantum computer.
Yeah, for your assignment.
For my job assignment.
Yes.
Then it would be your position that under the definition of university support, if I use this quantum computer, that is not going to be university support. That's your...
Correct. In that definition, yes.
But then for every discipline, we're going to have a different set of circumstances by which we're judging university support, no matter how resource intensive it is.
Mm-hmm.
So that limits very much of what is university support, because we're going to drill deep into what isn't for
mm-hmm.
every individual discipline.
So it all goes back to the assignment. Like, so for example, yes, you know, we can, there's all sorts of, even going back to the status quo language, shall mean the non-incidental use of university funds, personnel equipment, so on and so forth. So I think what we're trying to do is to, if the university comes in and brings in something, like in my role, if they gave me an extra $25,000, if there's something other than what the university is normally providing for your role, then it becomes university support. Simply having it to do your job should not be considered university support in these endeavors. Because it all goes back to your assignment. Are you given the proper tools to do your job, which is in Article 9
mm-hmm.
under assignments? So it's not... The current language goes a little bit above beyond the university support.
So, okay, if we look at the status quo, it actually uses kind of that opposite criteria.
Right.
It basically says resources available to the entire university community.
Correct.
Which kind of makes sense because that levels the field.
Correct.
In the new language that you're proposing, it is the most expensive, resource intensive, whatever it is, the highest, best technology ever in any field. So it is a moving target depending on every field and discipline.
No, that's not what we're saying. That we're not saying that, okay, in my discipline we can So if that's what's needed to do your job, if that's your assignment, if you're a researcher, if that's your assignment, then it shouldn't be.
So, Svetlana, would it...
Yeah,
is the
sorry.
Issue for you... And I see this, but...
Yeah, I don't think the issue isn't... The super high end. The issue is the lower end, with the mainly in the works field. With okay, if I'm going to use a university resource, then that's available to everyone. Then just simply using that resource doesn't mean that the university owns the end product.
Right. In that sense, the status quo definition covers that.
Yeah, made available to the university community for common use.
I
think the difference is that now it says made available to similarly situated employees for the performance of their assignment.
Right, that's the
that's
difference.
A much more,
mm-hmm.
well, it's a much more
pretty clear.
Limiting
right, but
definition.
It's also, but it has a huge huge implications. The whole point of the reason the university's here and we have the facilities, right, to
mm-hmm.
allow researchers to do their research is because we have the infrastructure
mm-hmm.
that is supported by a vast amount of money, whether it's from the state, contracts, grants, okay, you all know that.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is what university support is supposed to encompass, is what university's providing. Otherwise, you can do all of this in your garage. Mm-hmm. Right? And so what is it that the university is giving you by and by virtue of which the university will then claim ownership? Mm-hmm. So it is those specialized resources. So again, it is those specific things that mm-hmm. are specific to the discipline, or it can be. Mm-hmm. So the way to level the field is to have the status quo definition, as you're referring to it, mm-hmm. that says available to the entire community.
So I guess you've rejected this proposal?
I don't have the authority.
Where did this language come from?
This came from directly from the FSU's language.
Okay, so I guess FSU just doesn't get it.
There's an important distinction
well,
here.
If you want to tell FSU to accept everything in our contract, I'm sure they would not be happy to exchange their
contract. That's boring. But you get our point. This is not something that is hard to figure out.
No, we figured it out quite clearly.
Hold on. I'm saying from an academic point of view, okay? So I'm going to say, okay, so the language that is here is essentially so that we can have the freedom to think. Because sometimes, because I work multiple projects, not just write books and stuff, but I also do like virtual reality projects. I do a lot of stuff in the digital world. I do coding. But sometimes I feel, if this is going to belong to UCF, why am I working so hard? Because I know this genius idea of mine, I could probably sell it to Stanford or somewhere else. So it's this language is to allow us the freedom to think, to work in peace, and not feel like someone's going to steal our work one day. And yes, true, we're just academics. Some of us are super nerds, and we just want to be in our minds and do this work. So the intention, I believe, with FSU and what this was meant, and I do have friends at FSU, is to basically allow you to work without feeling that burden. So maybe it is academic. Maybe it's far too academic for, you know, a university that's very corporate-minded. Maybe perhaps that's the issue here. But it is meant in order so that we could work and not feel that someone's going to steal our work eventually. Because that's not a good feeling to have. And knowing that I've worked here for, been here now 9 years, sometimes I pull back from some projects because I know that one day UCF might steal it from me. And I don't like that feeling. So I think that was the aspirational language behind FSU, is to make us feel like we have the freedom to do something. And it's probably not going to make money, but I at least feel like no one's going to take it from me.
So we don't steal things that should not belong to the university, right? We take what's by statute mm-hmm. is the right of the university to take. It's state-owned intellectual property. And so
Do you mean the recent article where like UF stole $2 million for an award that faculty did?
I'm talking about the universities, but mm-hmm. Your description was helpful mm-hmm. in what you were saying. So, somebody's in there, whatever college they're in, and they're not working on a research project per se. You know, you can go into these other definitions about independent thought, et cetera, et cetera. So you have a thought, and then, so if we go from the invention side, it's not in your field or of your employment, so it's related to, I don't know, I thought of a cool thing of a vacuum cleaner the other day myself, so we'll use that.
Okay.
So you come up with some idea of a cool vacuum cleaner, and you want to work on it, and you happen to be here, so you work on your computer, and you work on, et cetera. Now, let's say you happen to be in a college where there's some sophisticated scientific equipment that's measuring vacuum forces and things like that. So is the intention then, I'm trying to understand the intention,
mm-hmm.
is the intention that you would feel that the university's sophisticated vacuum testing things should be available to you for your private use, for your idea? That's what it sounds like
a very fair question.
It's
because
a very fair
ours
question.
Is very broad and the existing language is just very narrow.
But is that the intention?
Of course not. You were not saying that.
No,
because that's outside activity.
That's where I'm not understanding.
So what I would, let's say, because I do have that situation right now where I'm actually working with downtown people, so I do a lot of different collaborative works. And right now it's really cool because he did his, like, it's called Namthar. It's like, so audio, so it's like a piece of something. Let's say this glass right here, right? And it belongs, let's say it belongs to your grandma. When you pick it up, it starts to, there's like a little code on it, and it, you put your phone over it, and then it tells a story. And it's not the story that, oh, this is a pair of glasses. It tells a story of it belongs to your grandma, and it tells you a story of your grandma. Mm-hmm. So it's really cool, and I have a lot of pieces like that. And he has special equipment. So my idea is, no, not to become completely independent of it. It's I collaborate, and then, you know, I again, being a nerd, I don't think I'm going to make any money off of this, but I don't want anyone taking it from me.
So
yeah.
Interesting. So in that collaboration then...
And it gives UCF also, if it does become very famous, it gives UCF a lot of clout as like a successful
right.
school.
So in that, if I kind of go back to the vacuum cleaner then... Mm-hmm. He's the person who has the vacuum cleaning stuff, sensors, in his UCF mm-hmm. unit. That's within his scope.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So then, theoretically, you would want yours to stay outside, but it's in his field, so then if he's involved in it, it's, yeah.
Yep.
We collaborate, we do. Which professors do?
I mean, the difference between status quo language, resources made available to the university committee for common use, the library, but not every student gets a laptop given to them by the university. But the computing resources made available to similarly situated employees, if I write a children's book or design a vacuum cleaner on my university laptop, that's the kind of resource that is not made available to the community, but is made available to me and similarly situated employees.
So, yeah, so...
Well, that definition, the way you're describing it, as far as laptops and whatnot, I think nobody would have any argument relative to that, but it's the... scope of this going further into yeah. some larger, and besides trying to figure out where, you know, where the real intentions are and how we can define it best,
mm-hmm.
University, you know, these pieces of equipment or laboratories and whatnot, legally, we don't have the right to allow personal use just across the board. So there's this is the line we're walking. It's not that we want to go, okay, we just mm-hmm. want every single thing, but
no, I don't think
we have to
that's not our
it's not our intention
for them to do.
Like I'm trying to I don't know exactly, I'm still not getting quite where the line is.
Mm-hmm.
So
well, maybe we can compromise and move the line in both directions.
Well, I mean,
yeah,
so if I understand it, you're trying to not make the line include the supercomputer that I, as an engineering computer science student, professor, get to use. My using that for my side project would be a appreciable use of university's resources not provided to every other similarly situated employee, right?
It's probably a good example.
Right, so I think we're approaching it from the top level. We're thinking from supercomputers down the laptops.
That's a lot.
Yes,
a huge difference.
That's
yeah.
a range, so... I think we both made some decent points on this side, and I think we'll
also
come
we're having discussions. So where the lines
well,
are.
This is an incredibly complicated subject.
It is.
So if I put line 50 and line 52 together, the use of university computer facilities you're worried about, but we're interpreting that as university facilities not made routinely or commonly available to similarly situated employees. That's the place where you would be starting to put the brakes on. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
And by the way, I like your. If you have a vacuum idea, you should do it.
Yeah.
Okay. I can't tell you.
I think our intention is really to allow people. It's kind of like. When copyright and patent law, there's like, this is one of my studies, one of my research is patent and copyright law in like the sense of like, does it help with innovation and innovative thinking? The answer is no. As a matter of fact, sometimes it restricts it. Like the United States is the outlier because, you know, it came out, the law came and everything was patented. It was very cheap to do and everything. But in a lot of places like Britain, France, Argentina, other places in Latin America, it actually restricted it because people felt like, oh, someone's going to steal it, right? So I think the intent is not to, you know, kind of to basically broaden, so to allow people to like work and to feel, hey, I have this crazy idea. We want crazy ideas. The best universities, Stanford, did you see all the crazy ideas that come out of there? The crazy ideas to start coming out. And so the idea is not that, you know, we just take our thing and make a lot of money and forget about UCF. No, we do it within UCF resources, but we get the credit for it. We feel safe that no one's going to steal our idea, that type of thing. So it's really to like broad, to make us more innovative, to make us feel like freer that we can do these things.
But you should be able to feel it with the existing structure. Because when you say steal, I don't even
steal's not the right word.
We commercialize it, and we give back the money to you. So what else is missing from that structure that makes you so concerned that somebody's going to steal it?
Well, I think this type of, and you're right, so steal is the wrong word.
Steal is the wrong word.
So I think with this language, what we're trying to do is, yes, we realize the university, 18.1 is, you know, says that the university, it is work for hire. Yes, we understand copyright law. And what we're doing is we're negotiating basically the exceptions with the copyright holders. So that, mm-hmm. that's one way, I think, to look at
just
how,
to jump
how
in
we're
here,
doing that. Sure, Rich.
As far as we share and all that wonderful, those wonderful words, if you look at 232, it says the university shall have a policy addressing the division of proceeds between the employee and the university.
Mm-hmm. In the Research Foundation, on the Research Foundation website and their manual,
that
you'll see the policy.
Okay.
And is that subject to change next year, 6 months
from
now?
That is what it is. If you Google UCF and royalty distribution, you'll come.
Because we were looking for
Where it is.
Oh, that's okay. Where it is.
You can go onto the Office of Research website, and then you'll see the Research Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can click through to the business manual.
So is the Research Foundation a direct service organization?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
So
it holds the ownership of IP.
Okay.
Enters into the licenses, and it's the entity that shares the royalties then back with the units and the faculty.
And my unanswered question is, can it change next month?
Well, I mean, if technically, I suppose, according to the Research Foundation bylaws, that would be where it's specified, and I can't tell you exactly what it says off the top of my head. I don't know, but that's also available on that website.
I guess that you'll hear later, or you will see later in our proposal, if you haven't seen it yet, we want to put the actual content of the policy in the contract so people know that it's not going to be subject to change down the road. But that's down the road in this document.
I don't think you're asking to put the entire policy. You're asking to put the economics.
The share,
correct. The vision.
Okay. Hopefully we understand where each other we're coming from on that.
Yes.
Can we move on?
Yeah.
All right. So again, what I see in 18.3 is you're excluding any reference to web-based materials. So we're just not going to deal with web-based courses in the contract?
No, it's going back to the definition of works.
Mm-hmm.
And I know we had that conversation about, the definitions. So,
but we've always had the same definition of works.
Right.
But we've also always had this language.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So, but you've now excluded this language.
Correct.
So you're saying, again, you don't want to have any discussion in the contract of what rights or limitations there may be on who owns, who has rights to use, whatever, on web-based materials.
Well, looking at the removing that definition kind of goes down to line 76, works developed without the use of appreciable university resources and solely for the purpose of instruction. So that's under the exceptions. So that's how it would be addressed in the contract. 76. So that's what web-based courses are.
Without
these. So do you want to use the example of like truly original, or because most of what's on web is not original?
Correct.
Okay.
But the infringing exceptions do not assert rights to the following works. Okay. Well, yeah. I mean, that is where we're coming down to.
Correct.
So, which is why why you don't want to include it in the definition.
Correct.
Why you don't want to have this stuff about web-based courses and who owns what, because your view is web-based, anything used for the purposes of instruction is solely the property of the faculty member.
Well, unless
if I'm reading it correctly.
Unless it's been mutually agreed upon, you know, that then it becomes joint ownership. But yes.
Okay.
Use your example.
But where does it say that?
The
point that you just made about being joined.
Oh, that says.
It says it's in B. Work shall be licensed by mutual agreement between the university and the employees who develop the materials.
With university supported efforts.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But of course, mutual agreement means either side can veto
yeah.
the other.
Yeah,
and
yes.
The problem
with
that.
No, of course, it's self-evident. You know, it's
yeah.
Right, but,
so, okay. I have an example. I teach French, and I have developed a series of videos using the Lightboard.
Completely original. Your
yeah,
work.
It's,
yeah.
Over
my
in
work.
The faculty multimedia.
For my students. So whose work is this? You know, and if I were to depart the university, you know, whose material is it? And can it be just like taken and given to another faculty who would be teaching the same course?
Well, I can give you what my answer would be, but...
Those are the questions that
we're trying to
answer in the contract.
Whatever is the answer as to where, how it should be, our intention is just for it to be clear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So...
But that's the fear we have, right? Because we put a lot of work, a lot of time, extra time, I would say. You know, as a teacher, I work 24/7. I go to bed and I'm thinking about what I'm going to do, and I'm not compensated for that work. When I do a Lightboard video, nobody says in my contract you shall do a Lightboard video. I'm doing it because I want to provide the best instruction to my students. It's a lot of work. It's
I'm
time.
I know what a Lightboard video is. I'm sorry.
Okay, so UCF has this facility, this board that is a glass that has a lot of light.
Is that
I don't
in
know.
College or is that in? CBL?
No, it's in OIR,
yes.
The Office of Instruction.
Any professor can ask these.
Okay, so
yes.
Any
it's
online teachers. Have
no, any faculty.
Any
employee can
so
use it as well.
Facilities.
Yes.
Instructor.
And
yes.
You go and you record a video teaching to your students, and as you're writing on the board from your perspective, when the students look at it, they see you in front of them writing like you were in a classroom. So this is pretty cool. It's a good way for me to...
And it's you personally, you're showing up in it.
Yeah.
I'm showing up. I'm in front of the students. I think it's pretty cool. And so when I do this work... My chair has not required that I do this work. I do it from like, wow, I'm like, this is so cool. The students will love this. It's going to be a way to engage them. So when I put all of this work and all this energy to do this product, whose product is it? You know, is it mine? Is it the university's? And if it is the university's, I think... I'm going to say something that does not make sense to you, probably. If it is the university, I'm thinking that I'm enhancing what the university proposes, and maybe we could collaborate in terms of, like, maybe UCF should, I don't know, pay me for putting such great work out there for the students. Because I'm not...
They want other people to be able to use it.
Yeah, exactly. So if it is just like, well, you've done that, well... It's UCF's.
Well,
so what is the incentive for me when I hear it this way? It's probably to say, you know what? That's a lot of energy. I will just use my energy differently. And I might not want to use Lightboard or anything that UCF proposes.
The additional concern would be somebody who's a visiting instructor here, going to be here for 3 years, developing the journey that they will take with them to their next job. Can UCF say, no, that's ours, we want UCF students to have the benefit of this, and you cannot take those videos with you to wherever you go next, because the university owns
it. Well, it doesn't have to be either or.
But I think that's...
It can be, yes.
The fear is that I'm going to be developing things that I can't
continue. You may take it with you wherever you go, use it wherever you want to use it. Once you leave the university, though, we at least have a royalty-free license in it to be able to use it for instructional purposes. Well, our students, but you own it. We just have a license in it to be able, if we choose to use it for, in our instructional purposes, and only for instructional purposes.
So under the status quo, for regular instructional materials, mm-hmm. let's say regular, traditional, not technical, like what you're talking about, specialized,
mm-hmm.
and then under the status quo, where making use of these enhanced resources, I'll just call them that in general.
Mm-hmm.
Status quo, that has been where it's been really challenging, because then in each case, well, how much is it? This is where this definition of the, university support and appreciable use of university support is so challenging. Well, how much did it use? Who all gets to use that? And so in an attempt to try to make it be more clear, that was what the web-based courses language was kind of for, to give some clarity to at least web-based courses. It's complicated.
It is, and web-based courses is my area on campus, and I'll say that the instructional materials developed for web-based courses and face-to-face courses are the same thing. Instructional materials are instructional materials. I think that's why we want to treat them all the same. That's why we don't need these pockets of definitions. Their purposes are for instruction, regardless of the modality. If it's a video course, if it's a face-to-face course, if it's a blended course, I think that's what, when we're trying to carve out different definitions, I think that's when we run into problems in the contract. Because also we're trying to protect our members, especially in online, because of the inherent nature of digital materials can be easily copied, easily manipulated, and easily de-attributed. So for instance, I'm just claiming this is mine now. Versus, I can just type out, it's easy, it's just like white out their names.
We have had colleagues that have had this happen, that they develop a web course, the chair insists you let somebody else teach it, that person wipes your name off all the copyright statements, puts their own, and claims it as their
work. Who does work. That?
I have colleagues in education who have complained about this.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where we're coming from when it comes with works, instructions, and Sherry, to your point, because I know your proposal addresses a license back to the university to use it for free. I just wanted to address that real quick. We're not comfortable with that language because that should be a conversation with the employee. We're not going to make a blanket statement or agree to a blanket license on behalf of all of our employees. That's, if you want Mason's video, talk to Mason about it, for example. So,
okay.
Listen.
So if I just want to understand the intent then. Mm-hmm. So your intent is that no matter what resources are used here, people that are hired by UCF to come here and create and teach courses can create and teach a course using whatever resources, and they would individually own that, and UCF would have no right to use that.
So, no, that's not what we're saying. We're saying appreciable use of university resources.
Which would be how, what's appreciable in that?
So, for instance, I think the other language is non-incidental, I think, is the status quo language with Okay, what's non-incidental mean?
Same question for appreciable. So is her example, right. I'm sorry, I don't remember what your name
Marie.
Is. Marie. Is Marie's example appreciable in your definition?
I think, well.
I'm asking only in 10.
Right. No, I understand. Kind of going back to what Giovanna and Marie said, the structure in the contract, you know, it's in this area, there is going to be gray areas. Yes, I think we can all agree to that because of how the law is written and the case law is written outside of the contract. I think what we're trying to do for our members is to err on the side of the employee. So, for instance, if there is some gray area, then yes, it's on the inside of the employee. Appreciable is different; is going to be individualized. Non-incidental, just like now, is going to be individualized. So I think the language has to set the structure in the contract, and then if we have different interpretations, there's a process for that.
So if your fear, as described, you know, if it's uncertain and it's every single person and every single time has to be evaluated based on the circumstances, which is what we have had, or worse, actually,
mm-hmm.
How in the, that makes no impact on the fear because nobody has any certainty with which to evaluate what they're doing. And
mm-hmm.
then even when it comes to us, it's impossible to manage. I'm not seeing how that's functional or how it achieves the purpose of helping people not be fearful and knowing what they can do
mm-hmm.
and not do and where the ownership's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like the opposite. And maybe I'm not just getting it, but I...
Well, I think we can... No, I understand your concern and your statement.
Okay, so
we've gotten down to okay, disclosure and university review.
Mm-hmm.
And we agreed on the 90 days, so I think that's a real problem.
Okay.
Because then they would say that it's personal use. And people could attack me, just
because right. I know what you're saying about this being, but the material under inventions, that is not in Article 19.
Okay.
Oh.
So.
This says outside activity.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, you have to modify.
That's why I was wanting to get
the
CBA because
okay.
I was trying to see. Yeah. Okay. I mean, I think something that you're right. We don't need to dual cover stuff.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But there's certain places where we need to make sure that it's covered.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think that's it.
Okay.
19 has any of this
yeah.
language on waiving.
So that.
So next time.
We would like to kind of keep in just because
mm-hmm.
it needs to be someplace.
Okay, eventually we'll throw it in.
Yeah, if it needs to be in 19 next time, we can move it to 19. We did that this time, moving stuff around a little bit. But,
okay.
Okay. And I think the last piece that, where we are probably slightly apart on, is 18.4.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe 18.5, I have to look at that again. So.
Yeah, 18.5 is just the one word.
Yeah. So, well.
Because I don't think 18. Point, I don't think your proposal included in 18.4.
No, it didn't.
No,
so,
okay.
Okay. But I think 18.5 is, we had something very similar. So.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, it, in our proposals,
yeah.
your exact language,
except for shall.
Except for shall, that it's the
mm-hmm.
highlighted word. That's
yeah. Okay.
Okay. So that's, you got that from there, 18.5.
No, 18.5 was in their, was in their proposal, and then our proposal
one,
just.
Two, three. Oh, just a little mistake, so four.
Yeah.
Yeah, 18.5 for division of proceeds and investments.
Yeah.
Four.
Oh, yes, sorry.
I know that we have grilled you considerably, and it may seem like we are totally opposed to your proposal. We're not.
Mm-hmm.
I think we have a lot of areas where we are close to
That's
agreement.
What I was thinking.
I think there's at least probably one place where we're very far apart, and
okay.
we're going to have to work on some compromises to figure out where we go with that.
Okay.
But
that
our team probably sense. Wants to take a caucus at this
yeah,
point.
Yeah, we can caucus, definitely.
Yeah,
thank you.
Okay, thank you.
You know, it's everybody's fun subject, right?
It's everybody's fun subject. And you're sitting over there being grilled by three lawyers.
We solved all the world's problems.
Oh, don't
a
we?
A bunch of them.
Well, we had, thank you for a good discussion. I think we had a good, productive discussion, and we had a good discussion. I don't think we've reached any firm conclusions yet. We will take this back and see what we can, what we work with.
Okay.
So, given what, you know, the discussions we've had, and mm-hmm. we're going to have to get some, obviously, buy-in from some other people on some of this stuff. So.
Okay.
I did have a question. We were able to locate the research, the division of proceeds. Thank you very much for pointing
that.
Buried
in a Word document you had to download and open Microsoft Word. It was not easy to find.
Mm-hmm. But I just wanted to put this on the table that we're happy with what the contents of that language says.
Okay.
So I know our proposal is a little different, but we're happy to just bring that existing language to capture the current practice into the contract.
Mm-hmm. And we can look at that then. That's helpful.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just going to, you know, some of this is just...
I know.
And I'm going to have to get the provost to say, okay, am I going to, what does she want? I mean, I think I know what she wants, but...
Mm-hmm.
I mean, different provosts want different things. What I would, what Dale would have wanted, and what Elizabeth would want, are probably very different. So, but I mean, I have had discussions with her, but in a different context. So,
okay.
We'll work on this, and we'll see what we can come up with next time.
Okay.
And we looked at the FSU website too.
Did you see it? So our next session is December 12th?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Awesome.
Thank you very much.
So Mike, if you bought a
so will you send language before our next session? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
No, I have not.
And then
we have a room above.